Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor Kesem and Diana Kelly. We live in a cyberspace almost all the time, but do we know enough about living in it securely? Join this dynamic duo as they take you through an exploration of daily cyber activities and how you can make better choices to make them secure for yourself and your family. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome to Your Everyday Cyber. I'm Limor Kesem, a cybersecurity professional and advisor. My co-host is Diana Kelly, a cybersecurity expert who is the CTO and co-founder of Security Curve. Now, who doesn't like shopping online? Whether it is to find the perfect gift for a friend, plan a much-needed vacation after the pandemic, or simply pay the electricity bill. Online payments are definitely an easy way to streamline the payment process for us. And quite literally, our lives are streamlined by this. So especially these days, you know, with smartphones in our hands, it's all that much easier to order food or other necessities that we need from online shops and apps. I know that my app arsenal has grown tremendously during this period. But on the other hand, there's also some level of risk. It seems there is yet another report almost every month about massive amounts of credit card numbers being stolen and sold to the highest bidder among criminals and fraudsters. That happens on the dark web, in underground sites, and sometimes even in the open web. You could sometimes find it on Facebook. I mean, this has gotten really crazy. So there's risk too.
Yeah, it's so true, Limor. I mean, at this point, I don't know anyone who hasn't had to change their credit card number at some point because their card was compromised, or other fraud was detected. But I think it's really amazing seeing how very sensitive banks are to determining fraudulent activity quickly. I normally am not like a person who goes out for a lot of expensive meals when I travel, unless I have to go to a business dinner, right? And in that case, usually someone else is paying. But so whether I'm in Singapore or Seattle, my meal charges usually just like the cost of an almond milk latte. But a couple of years ago when I was at Black Hat in Vegas, I took a friend out for lunch because it was his birthday and I took him to a steakhouse. And as I was exiting the restaurant, I mean, just had paid and was just walking out to go back to the conference, my bank pinged me with a potential fraud alert. So that was just amazing to me. They knew a steakhouse lunch did not look like a latte. So very sensitive fraud detection there.
Seriously, that's a good catch. I know there are other innovations, you know, helping to keep our online payments safe. It's something the banks and card issuers work a lot on to truly minimize it. But sometimes it can be difficult to make sense of all the options and determine, you know, which one should I use now in certain situations? You know, sometimes like, should I use a debit card here? Should I use a credit card? And this is why I'm really pleased and happy to welcome the host of the popular Fraudology podcast, Carice Hendrick, to our Everyday Cyber podcast. Carice has an impressive career in fraud prevention and was awarded the Legends of Fraud Prevention title in 2019. So, Carice, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. And we'll start with the foundation. What are the main people that people pay online or can pay online nowadays?
Well, you know, it's taking a little bit of a step back. Online payments have really progressed over the last, you know, 20 years, just like the internet has. And really, it started out with just credit cards, you know, primarily in the US. I mean, and then internationally as well, there are various local payment methods that are more preferred in geographies, such as, you know, Brazil is more on installment payments, which is also becoming more popular in the US and other areas in Europe and other areas. But there's direct payment method, there's ACH, there's through mobile wallets like Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, Google Pay, etc. Obviously, online companies want to make sure that it's the easiest, that there's no friction for people to pay online. And really, it's important to know, I think, that a lot of people think that shopping online is not safe. And I would say that that's actually not true. a lot of people think that if they shop online, that their credit card number is going to be stolen that way. And actually, over the last 10 years, because of banking rules and rules really led by Visa and MasterCard and Amex and Discover, that's not really the case anymore. It's much harder for hackers to get full credit card numbers from online sites. So often, you know, when I would speak to victims of credit card fraud over a decade ago, often they would say, well, I don't understand how my card was stolen. I didn't shop online. And I think it's important to know that often the data gathering piece, the piece of getting your credit card number, often happens offline in person, POS systems, you know, for small shops that may have the same password across all of the everyone who uses the POS systems, et cetera. So, but there are things in place that if your existing payment method is stolen, whether it's a credit card or your bank account for ACH transactions or your mobile wallet or, you know, your PayPal or, you know, any of these things, your BNPL, your buy now, pay later option, oftentimes for the consumer, there's a lot of protections in place to protect you so that you won't be held financially liable for that. You know, just, you know, using Diana's example, if her card had been stolen at that steakhouse, her bank would have paid her back. It's a little more complex on the back end as to who pays for what, but we can get into that later. But yeah, so it's, you know, really, it is secure to buy things online. It's just, it is important as consumers that we are being smart about it so that that doesn't happen.
So Carice, drilling in a little bit on that is what you were talking about with credit cards and ACH, which a lot of people know as debit cards.
Yes.
Now, it used to be that those were very different. You really understood when you were using your ATM card versus when you were using a credit card. But nowadays, they're just completely blended and interchangeable. And I think a lot of people may not even understand, you know, that their ATM card is a debit card versus a credit card. Is there anything as far as that paying back, you know, making people whole that are fraud that may be different for a user, whether they're using a credit card to shop online or a debit card that's got that credit, you know, it's got that Visa or MasterCard logo on it?
Yeah. So this has also changed quite a bit over the last 10, 20 years since I've been in the industry. And I think sometimes there's outdated information that still, you know, gets, I've heard one security professional go on, you know, TV and say, never use your debit card to prevent fraud. And I'm like, well, that's not totally the case. What is different is how quickly your bank will pay you back. So especially here in the US, a lot of our ATM cards or debit cards have the Visa or MasterCard logo on them. And so that does allow them to be used as the same as a credit card in that way. So as a consumer, I don't see the difference whether I use my, you know, my Chase credit card or my local credit union, you know, debit card. But should both of those be stolen at the same time, there'd be a bit of a different path. So for the credit card companies are often more quick to give you a temporary credit on your account for those funds while they research the validity of the fraud claim. And with debit cards, often there's a little bit of a lag in the time that it's repaid, as well as there's more scrutiny placed on debit card purchases that are claimed as fraud. So on the e-commerce side, we have this term called friendly fraud, which is not my favorite term, but it essentially it's used to describe when a consumer takes advantage of the chargeback system. And if I made a big purchase and then I'm like, ooh, I don't want to pay my credit card bill, I could call my credit card company and say, oh, I didn't make it. And they're not as, they don't scrutinize that as much. Oftentimes, especially because if it's online, it's the merchant that actually pays you back in the long run, not the bank. But also because the debit card and credit card rules are governed by different entities. So there's different processes on the banking side. But what I would say is that doesn't mean that if you use your debit card and your debit card number is stolen, that you won't be paid back or that there isn't protection, because there is. It's just a little bit different and it might take longer. So often I say, you know, if if you're in a position where you can use credit cards, because I think that's also something that needs to be acknowledged, that not everyone has, you know, good credit or credit worthiness or, you know, even established credit. But if you are in a position of using a credit card for those bigger purchases, whether in person or online, I think there's just a little bit more security that, you know, that like you can just call your bank and it'll get taken care of right away. But there's really no harm in using your debit card for everyday purchases, whether it's online or in person as well. It's not like there isn't at all fraud protection.
That's true. I remember using my debit card a lot. I used to live in Canada, but now I live in Israel, and here they don't have the actual same thing as debit cards. But I remember using my debit card almost all the time, and now I moved completely to credit cards. So it's really good, interesting differences when it comes to risk. How about that second category of payment methods? Let's say the well-known payment services like we have, you know, PayPal, Zelle, Apple Pay, Amazon Pay, Venmo. Are these a good option, or is anything, let's say, better than the other?
It depends on the lens that you look at as far as which one's better or worse. When we're talking about fraud protection for consumers, all of those, for the most part, are the most protected for consumers. There is a layer of protection for business owners, especially in e-commerce. Like I mentioned, there's a lot more considerations as far as, well, who's paying for it when the fraud happens, who's liable for it, because those can obviously add up quite a bit on the e-com side. But for consumers, I would say most of those are secure. Things like Apple Pay, PayPal has, you know, obviously, if you've been using PayPal for 20 years, you know that they had to learn the hard way how important risk is, but they've done an exceptional job. And I know a lot of people on that team, both past and present, who are just brilliant at protecting their consumers as well as the merchants that take their payment method. What I would say is most different is when you're looking at the peer-to-peer payment methods, and they do now enable, a lot of them are now enabling you to pay a business as well. Like I just paid my dog groomer via Venmo last week. But, you know, they started out with, if I wanted to pay Diana something for like send her $50 and, you know, we're in completely different states across the US, I could just send that to her and it instantly hit her account. But there's a lot of scams that are targeting consumers that way that are less protective for consumers. So when a consumer is asked to send money through a Zelle, a Venmo, a Cash App, et cetera, oftentimes if they're sending it to a scammer, you're not going to be reimbursed for that. There are some caveats, but for the most part, so that's why it's super, super important when ever you're contacted, even if you're trying to buy something on a marketplace like eBay and the seller says, hey, I want to avoid the fees accepting payments through eBay. So can you just send me money through Venmo or Cash App or whatever? It's on you. You may not get your product. And that could more than likely be your loss. There are a lot of scams impacting consumers on these apps right now. I know these companies are working, you know, to stop that, but there's just a lot of complexities to it. I think the other really important thing is beyond just the payment method, I think it's critical, and I know it's critical for consumers to protect the account as well. So, you know, your password is really, really important, and more than ever, because it is harder to get credit card numbers online now for hackers, they're now getting account details, passwords, and usernames. And a lot of, like over 80% of consumers use the same password for more than one account. I was guilty of that for a long time until I started to see what we call account takeovers just rise exponentially. And if you think about it, a lot of us use the same password for, you know, our bank, and I say us, the general us, not me, but our banking apps, our Venmos, our, you know, everything that's tied to our bank account. Sometimes you might use the same password as your email address and your, you know, some account that you had 10 years ago that you forgot about. And that is where the hackers are going for now, is account credentials. So, and actually, I think it's even more important to protect your account level even more than the actual payment method, because your credit card number can be changed instantly. That's something that hackers learned pretty quickly after the Target and Home Depot breaches of 2013, is that Those card numbers, once the banks realized all these people went to Target or Home Depot, they canceled the card and reissued one. Now they're, you know, those card numbers are essentially ineffective to the fraudsters, but you get their username and password. That takes a lot longer, especially if it's connected to 20, 30, 40 accounts. So I often recommend that people use password managers. So you really only have to remember one password and keep it very secure. And, you know, unique passwords, strong passwords, not using password 123, for example. And these are probably things you guys talk about all the time. But when we're talking about payment methods, I think it's equally important to talk about the importance of keeping the account safe. I've worked with several large e-commerce companies, and especially in the digital banking and financial services, where they're seeing a lot of account takeovers, and there's only so much they can do because it's actually in the hands of the consumers to protect their individual accounts. Oftentimes these banks will reimburse the consumer, but it can be very timely. It can take weeks to have it reviewed. If it's tied to your bank account, you could have all of the money in your bank account, you know, drained out, not just whatever you had in your wallet for that payment method. So we're kind of talking about two different things: the payment methods you use directly to make purchases, and then also the accounts behind those payment methods. But they're equally important to keep safe and secure.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for bringing up password managers again. For our your everyday cyber listeners know that Lamore and I are huge proponents of using password managers and wallets.
And there's a reason for that, yeah. Right? Like, there's a reason why those of us in security say that on a loop, because yeah. It's critical, and we see what happens when they don't.
Yeah, it's so true. So speaking of accounts, and you're right, there's, you know, we're using accounts about the accounts to your, you know, log in to PayPal or to Zelle or something, and also your bank account, the actual number, you know, your routing. But a lot of these pay, you know, the way that you pay, whether you're using these different, you know, PayPal, Zelle, Apple Pay, Amazon Pay, they have to go back to some kind of a funding source, whether it's a credit card or very often it's a link into your own checking account at your financial services institution. So is there, in addition to what you were talking about with, you know, making sure that you've got unique passwords, is there anything else that consumers should be thinking about before they link their checking account or their savings account to one of these online payment methods? Or if they do, what's the best way to make sure they're doing that securely?
Well, I mean, if we're going to super best practice, I actually think that, you know, if you're going to be really high level, especially if there's a lot of money in those bank accounts, it's actually being recommended that you use a completely different device, a completely different computer or, you know, smartphone that's logging into the most secure sites, right? Your bank account, your investing portfolios, anything that's connected to your bank account, because there's a lot of malware out there that's being impacted onto user computers to drain all of that information as you use it every day. I certainly don't want to scare everyone, but like, that's just something, if you're really going to gold medal and you have a lot to protect, that's the best way. And in addition to that, having very unique passwords and strong passwords on each of those accounts, obviously. And oftentimes too, having it linked to a different email address. There's a lot of situations now where fraudsters have realized that, especially as more companies are implementing multi-factor authentication. And the way you know that is when you make a purchase online and they send you a code via your email or your phone number, and you have to enter that in order to complete the purchase. That's because of account takeovers. And that's also because of wanting, you know, to protect things. But unfortunately, fraudsters are like, well, how do we get it? How do we get past this hurdle that is put up in front of us? So they realize, well, the email inbox has the keys to the kingdom. Not only are we going to be able to pass those authentication tests if we log into someone's account for banking or anywhere else, but we also can know where they shop, and we can know where their accounts are, and we can do forgot my password. And so there's a lot of, I think a lot of people think, okay, well, as long as I keep my bank account safe or my, you know, my mobile wallet safe, it's fine. But you've got to think too, what it's tied to, right? What email address are you using? So often I think it's important to use a different email address for those secure accounts as well as a different password, as well as, you know, all those things. And then also having a regular time where you're updating the password, you're updating the information for multi-factor authentication, making sure that the email address they're sending it to is accurate and secure, and signing up for multi-factor authentication for your email, for your social media. There are scammers everywhere trying to take advantage of consumers, and there's a reason for that, because it works. And so it's really important to think ahead of it and do that. So I just think anything that's tied to those really important things, kind of think of it as like your safe within your house for your really important documents. I think it's really important to make sure that you're being extra secure on those.
That is fascinating. I definitely agree with that. I also think that there should be like one account maybe that is, an email account that is only for those extra important things. Even, you know, I'll say for your investment accounts, for those kinds of things that you really don't want anything or anyone ever getting to them. And those emails are not used often. Only you know their password. Using password manager is absolutely part of it. So I definitely agree. I'm wondering also about direct payments. Let's say either, you know, paying directly through vendor's website or maybe the bill pay at my bank. Any issues or concerns I should have in mind for those?
I think the most important thing there is making sure that you are paying a trusted source. So you're paying the right entity and then it's going to the right people. You know, may receive phone calls saying, oh, this is your gas company and you're past due and we're going to send you to collections and maybe even jail. And we need you to send a payment right now to us. And if you're not taking a step back to think, wait, why did I not get anything into the mail? And they didn't even say the name of my gas company. And, you know, all of those things. Or wait, they called me and they're asking for payment information. Maybe I should call the customer service number in order to make a payment. Those things are critical when we're talking about you know, those types of payments, especially bill pay, et cetera. So it's less these days. I would say, like, if we were having this conversation 10 years ago, I would have been all about how it's important to keep the payment method online very secure and, you know, using it that way. But I think now, because of just the way things have evolved, both because we're doing our jobs well in cybersecurity and in fraud prevention, and just because, unfortunately, consumer education hasn't kept up, there's just so many opportunities throughout the value chain of a payment that need to be considered. So I think the biggest thing is really making sure that you're paying the right source and a good source, because oftentimes when you're using bill pay, there's not, and payments like that out of your, directly out of your bank account through your bank, there's not going to be the level of fraud protection, so to speak, as there is on credit cards. The fraud protection that a lot of people have gotten used to on credit cards is directly from Visa and MasterCard and Amex and Discover. It's not, it doesn't cover all other payment methods. So on other payment methods, you just need to be really sure that you're paying the people that you intend to and that they're authorized and that that's, you know, otherwise that money could be gone. So those are my biggest tips of advice. There's definitely other things as far as, you know, talking to your financial institution, asking them specifically how you can keep that specific account safe. But really, whenever you are in control of sending money to anyone and it's not via a credit card, and I mean, I would argue also, even if it is via a credit card, keeping that safe, but that really is a consumer's responsibility that often doesn't get talked about.
So, wow, that's just really helpful and insightful. And it inspires me. It's a slightly different path. And maybe I shouldn't admit to this, but once I signed up for a paid app, it was a VPN, and I paid for it through Google. When it came time to do the renew, the company pushed that renewal through their site into my email. And then I paid for the renewal through their site. So now I was being double billed. I was renewing through Google automatically and they were charging me through the site. And it took me actually a few months to figure it out. I figured it out, I cleaned it up, but the company refused to refund me. And I've talked to some other people and this apparently is not uncommon. So any tips for people who want to avoid getting double billed when they're buying services and subscriptions online like that?
Yeah, subscriptions have become very attractive to businesses. And there's a whole other conversation to be had about things that businesses need to be thinking about, because there are a lot of risks on them too. I see it. So many companies being like, we're going to offer a subscription and it's just going to mean so much money for us. And there are a lot of risks on their end that they really need to consider. But as far as consumers go, so one thing, I'm sure you already know this, but that is common, especially when you're buying an app through an app store, because the app, and this is actually being litigated between Epic Games and Apple right now, the app store takes a pretty significant chunk of that transaction amount. So there is a push for online companies to want your credit card information directly so that they can charge you, so that they're really only paying like less than 3% in processing fees rather than 30%. But when that happens, I think it's good to kind of think in your head, well, wait, are they still going to pay? Are they still going to renew my subscription through the app store as well? So that would be the first thing, in going in and canceling that subscription through the app store. Now, if those charges have already happened, this is a good thing about the chargeback system. I spend the majority of my career actually helping online companies prevent and reduce losses due to chargebacks. But for consumers, this is why it's in place. Not only if your card was stolen, but if you're being double charged, there's a chargeback code for that. There are tens of chargeback codes for all different things, and to protect consumers from companies that are charging things incorrectly. So, you know, double billing, or maybe you buy something and it never is received to you, etc. So it is good to be able to call your bank. And this actually kind of goes back to the first question too. If it's a credit, I think it is good to put recurring transactions on a credit card for this purpose, because there are more companies that, I mean, I have a company that I have canceled the subscription every month, and I actually just got the email this morning, and I'm like, I have not used this service in months, and I am trying to get it. And they're a well-known brand. So it's not just the shady ones. So I think it's, you know, it's important to call your, so I need to pick up the phone and call my bank and say, okay, now it's chargeback time. I try hard, especially since I know a lot of these companies not to issue chargebacks. But in this case, like, I just can't, you know, so I do think that is a case where you can call your bank, and that's not a situation of friendly fraud. The merchant may call it that, but really it's the merchant doing something that's making you be paying twice. And I would imagine that the VPN service wasn't so good that you'd be willing to pay twice.
Right. That's for sure.
That is true. And, you know, we're talking about all these interesting details. I'm wondering, Grace, if our listeners are listening today, what would you recommend to your Everyday Cyber listeners after they do this podcast? What is one or two things they could do to truly improve their online payment security?
Well, I think I mentioned a lot of them. The key ones that I talk about a lot, you know, unique passwords, using a password manager, ensuring that you are signed up for multi-factor authentication, ensuring that you're looking at your banking statements to identify anything that isn't that you didn't make, especially on debit cards, because the time frame for issuing a fraud chargeback is less than on credit cards. So making sure that every charge that's on your accounts, whether it's, you know, through a mobile app or an alternative payment method, or you know, push payments through your account or whatever it is, that you're making sure that you're signed up for multi-factor authentication, that you're looking at those purchases, and just, you know, overall good hygiene. Also, if you're not using a service that's tied to your bank account, unsubscribe. That's something that, you know, and also you can, one other thing I forgot to mention is you can also set up a different bank account just for these online transactions, or just for a Zelle, or, well, Zelle is a little bit different, but Venmo and, you know, Cash App and others, so that they aren't, they if they do get access to that bank account, they're only stealing a little bit and not everything you have. So I think really, and also the other big thing I would say is, don't assume that someone else is taking care of your online security and that someone else is protecting your bank account and your payment methods and all of that. But do know that you, for the most part, can trust online merchants when it's on their site, especially when there's the lock on there, or and or it says, you know, that they're PCI compliant, or that you know, most the back end operational systems of payment acceptance for online are really pretty secure. You know, nothing is ever 100% secure, but you're not hearing about breaches of online roles of information and credit cards now. Now you're hearing breaches of username and password, or you're hearing of, you know, scams going directly to the consumer and conning them. And that's because we've gotten pretty good on the, you know, online space, on the online side, to protect consumers in that way.
That is true. Carice, thank you so much for talking to us about this important subject today. We all love the convenience of online payments, but no one wants to be scammed or see their hard-earned money fly out their account into the greedy hands of fraudsters. And thank you, our listeners, for being with us today. I hope that this episode was very helpful to you, as it was to us, and that will entice you to learn more and pass it on to your friends and family as well. Please follow the podcast and get involved. You can reach out to us on Twitter at @cyber_everyday. We're on LinkedIn. So is Carice, if you want to send some questions, or if you want to suggest new topics to Diana and I for upcoming episodes. And you can email us at youreverydaycyber@securitycurve.com. Our podcast page has more details for you and resources from each and every episode, including information about ways to reduce risk of fraud when paying on the internet. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and stay safe out there.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor and Diana. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.